Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo with your host, Dr. Tanisha Guy, licensed professional counselor, and co-host Andrea Wise Brown, life strategist and licensed professional counselor, and Sean the Realist. Dr. Guy Monday Night Gumbo and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by talk show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of the show host. Dr. Guy Monday Night Gumbo is not intended to be therapy, but the sole purpose is to disseminate information, increase dialogue across ages, religious preference, gender, and sexual orientation. Don't forget to tune in every week to Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo. I do apologize, everyone, because I don't know if I have allergies or a cold. I've never had allergies before, but since living in the DFW area, I think I have allergies now. So I will apologize for how I sound like a frog is in my throat. But we're going to go ahead and jump right into our topic this evening, and I'm going to first welcome on our guest to the show. So our guest for this evening is Viema Emmanuel Perez, and she's a licensed professional counselor, a life coach, a motivational speaker, and she does so many more things, and so I'm so delighted to have her on the show as a guest tonight. Hi, Viema.
Hi, Tanisha.
And as you guys all know, my co-host, Mr. Sean the Realist.
Hello, ladies. How you doing tonight?
We are good. Well, at least I'm good, with the exception of sounding like there's a frog in my throat. But are you guys ready to start on tonight's topic?
Yeah.
Great, because I am. And we've already been getting some feedback on Facebook about the topic, so tonight's show topic, has social media ruined relationships? Are people too busy looking for likes and not looking for love? So we're going to go ahead and jump right into that question. Sean, because that was one of the topics that you and I have talked about, I'm kind of going to go to you first. And then, Viema, I'm going to come to you with your thoughts about, do you believe that in 2015, social media is really ruining relationships?
Okay.
Well, I don't think that it is social media. I mean, I think that it's a tool that is used, but kind of like any other thing we talk about.
Who has more money? Does more money ruin a relationship?
So that's the problem of social media. It gives people access to be responsible to other people, to attention, the things that we're really sometimes not prepared for.
Sean, it was kind of hard for me to hear the last part of your statement. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had another phone call. I'm important sometimes. yes. You know, but we'll call back. This is your hour.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, so basically, I got to get on her for calling. She know what I do at 7. So anyway, yeah, basically, just that it's more about not being responsible with the access. Because there have been a lot of shifts in society. There's been a shift from dating to people hang out now. That's what they call it. And there's been a shift from marriage being so important, and now people are, we'll say, cohabitating or having trial marriages, per se. So there's just been a shift in society, and social media is just one of the tools that have assisted in that shift.
I am going to go to Mrs. Viema. And by the way, I want to say big ups and shouts out to the new Mrs. Viema, Emmanuel Perez, recently married. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So we are definitely eager to kind of hear what some of your thoughts are about the whole social media ruin relationships, especially since you're, you know, recently married, and kind of what are your thoughts on this particular topic?
Yes, well, I kind of agree with Sean. I don't think that social media itself is evil. I think it's dependent on how people use it. I just, for some reason, the story came to my mind of like a man that was caught in his fidelity. Like, the only reason why his wife found out that he was cheating and had a whole different life is because he created a different alias and had a Facebook profile. and somehow by them having mutual friends, it linked her to and suggested that he should be friends with her. And she's like, that's my husband, and why does he have a different name? So that started a whole, just a bunch of marital discord within them. Because I feel like the evil part of it or the negative side of it is that you have this false persona at times that you put on, and it kind of allows you to take on another alias. I mean, that would be the extreme case of me seeing Facebook being abused.
Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you that know me, you hear me say this all the time, that I just think Facebook is the devil. I say that jokingly, but I do have some concerns about social media. And I guess for me, I think that it prevents people from just doing the good old-fashioned communication or communicating that they used to do. So, for example, I don't think people hold conversations anymore. I think everything is taking place on, you know, social media websites. For example, someone has sent me something on Facebook, I guess, like they messaged me. And again, because I'm not very versed in Facebook, I think it was a message. And then I didn't get it because I don't check Facebook frequently, and so months and months it went by, and so I finally got it, or I called or whatever, and the person, she was upset with me because she says, well, I sent this to you months ago, why didn't you respond back? And I was thinking, but you have my cell phone number. So I kind of wonder if, because of the whole social media frenzy, that we've forgotten actually how to have relationships with human beings face to face.
Yeah, I would say that I agree with that, and the fact that social media presents more and a more convenient type of way to communicate, because you're on your phone, you're already on it, you see a funny video that's posted on Facebook, you just tag whoever you think should see it, as opposed to maybe being a conversation piece and calling the person and talking about the video that you tagged them in.
So it does create this disconnect. Like, I see the pros and cons to it. I see the pros is that social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, it allows you to connect to millions of people nationwide, internationally. And so I get the benefit of that. But then the pro to that seems like, even though it allows you to connect to so many people that are outside your normal scope of reach, that the ones that are right there in your present area that you seem to become disconnected from. So prime example, I was at dinner with a girlfriend a couple of weeks ago, and it was a young couple, right? Young couple, and they were sitting at the table right next to us. And, like, for those of you who have eaten at Cheesecake Factory, you know the tables are really close. Like, you're darn near eating dinner with the people sitting next to you. So we just happened to look to the side, and the woman at the table is on her Facebook, like, the entire date. She doesn't say anything. She doesn't interact with him. He doesn't say anything. And so the entire time when they sat at the table, she was scrolling through her Facebook. And I was thinking, this is impossible. Like, they were there for at least an hour the entire time we were there, and she stayed on her Facebook app. I don't even think anything was said. When the food came, they ate, she was still on her Facebook page. The food left, they got the check, she was still on her Facebook page. So I'm thinking, who dates like this? How do you have a relationship when your phone is the person that you're dating?
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a bad date sometimes, I got to be honest with you.
For who? Sean?
For me. You know, sometimes I don't want to listen. I don't want to hear you talk. Just sit there and look cute.
Wow.
That's not a – who goes on – okay. Sean?
Yes, ma'am.
The point of going on a date is for company, to entertain each other. Why would someone want to go on a date with another person, and the entire time when they're on the date, that person is on their social media?
Well, let's back up and redefine the purpose of a date. What you've given is your purpose.
Okay.
So that may not be the universal purpose for a date.
What's Sean's definition?
It's not about Sean. I'm just saying we're here to talk about the masses. So, you know, it's easy to assume that they were on a typical romantic date. You know, maybe it wasn't. Maybe they just were associates. Maybe that was his cousin. Maybe they just had some other form of relationship. Who's to say?
Okay. I'll go with that. Maybe it was not a romantic date. Maybe it was platonic. Maybe it was even a family member. But let's just go back to good old-fashioned decency and courtesy that says common etiquette means you're not going to entertain your phone while you're at dinner talking to someone else. Like, I remember a point where if your phone rang and you were at the dinner table, you just didn't answer it because it's just rude. So now you're saying it's acceptable to just be on social media while you're even having dinner. Let's say it wasn't a date. Let's just say you were having dinner with someone. Even if it was even if I was with my homegirl and we're out having dinner and she's on her social media the entire time, girl, I didn't need to come out to dinner with you. I could have had dinner by myself.
True.
I think it's what we talk about. I'm real big on the demographical groups and, the baby boomers, Generation X, Generation Y, and the millennials. And there are different rules for different segments of society. So if we look across all segments, I believe we talked about this previously, the baby boomers generally marry people within 5 miles of where they resided at. Generation X and Y a little further, the millennials a little further than that. So when you just talk about your reach and how it's grown and some of the ways that etiquette has been redefined, you meet some people, like your grandmother, she remembers, when they had black and white TVs. And then, you remember when they had pagers. These people, some people don't remember before cell phones. So, I think that when you talk about different groups, you have different mores that are acceptable within that group. So it's going to be difficult for you to impose your set of mores on the next generation, which is kind of what I think we're talking about.
I don't doubt that because there are differences in generations that there's different behavioral types. I understand that. But because we have different behavioral types across the generation, at one point did it become acceptable to ignore the face-to-face person that's present with you for someone that is virtually present? At what point is that acceptable and okay?
I don't know if it's acceptable. Like I said, you just kind of observed them from a distance. She might have been talking to him on Facebook. He didn't have any phone out.
No phone out at all. It was just her.
Well, in cases like I've been in those situations, and those women tend to be a little bit more self-absorbed, which may be a trade-off from some capacity that he was not willing to deal with. But, like I said, I've been in those situations and they have worked out for me in the capacity that I expected them to. So I can't necessarily say that was an unsuccessful endeavor for him or her.
Okay. I'm going to leave you, Sean, and I'm going to go to Viemma. Viemma, in 2015, has it become acceptable now to entertain conversations or dialogue or whatever the case may be on social media while engaging someone at dinner, whether it's platonic or romantic?
I feel that it has become more acceptable, but I don't agree with it becoming more acceptable. Because if not, then why would there be such a push, even like certain commercials about like, it's family dinner time, everyone turn in your phones or put down your phones, that type thing. I agree that it is more acceptable, but that doesn't mean that it's etiquette, that's proper etiquette by no means.
Okay. What do you guys think about this? In 2012, there was a study done by the National Institute of Health that looked at internet social media being an addiction. And the term they're calling it is internet addiction disorder, IAD. And they're stating that it's ruining lives because it's causing neurological complications, psychological disturbances, and social problems. Now, currently, it's not listed in the DSM-5, but we do know that there are ever-changing diagnoses that are added to the DSM as it grows and changes. So what do you guys think about the fact that they're potentially now saying that there is a such thing as internet addiction disorder and social media is falling within that category?
Well, I will let the licensed practitioners speak first.
Sure, put it on us. I would have to say it's pretty sad that it's gone so far that it needs a formal diagnosis to identify that it's problematic. And and hindering relationships and even causing maybe other issues outside of relationships. Wanting to touch on some of the psychological disturbances is, you know, you sit here, and I've heard people say this before, you sit here and you look at people post basically the highlights and the reels of their life, and then they compare it to what's going on in their own life. And that brings on depression for those that are, you know, maybe not having, you know, like girls taking pictures of like a bouquet of flowers that their bae or whoever got for them. And it's like, well, where are my flowers? But that speaks to the individual person, not only the actual Facebook post, but how that person internalizes and always compares themselves to what their friends are posting.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad.
John, what are your thoughts that they're comparing the social media frenzy to an internet addiction?
Well, you know, I always feel as though, you know, we're just one paper from somebody trying to get their doctor to come up with a new addiction syndrome. So that's always been my stance. So, you know, I remember I was reading that there was some discussion about the movie Avatar and how every it was some people that really loved the graphics and they just would watch the movie all day. And it was an addiction because it was so beautiful to them. So, I mean, I think that sometimes we kind of get carried away with, you know, people with some of their other fears, like being rejected or being responsible or, you know, making mistakes. And so we create these scenarios, syndromes, whatever you want to call them, but those are just basically what it boils down to is when you are engaged in social media, you are afraid of the rejection of dealing with people directly, as well as being responsible for yourself and making mistakes and learning how to fix them. So, I mean, I think those are more the core competencies than actually internet addiction. It's more about the person and some of their personality problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So potentially what we're seeing is an increase of social media users who may have other psychological deficits. Because according to one study, they said that individuals in particular, as you talk about the millennium babies, that these individuals seem to have less empathy than those compared to, for example, baby boomers. And they're saying that they're showing less empathy because in social media, they're more likely to say things that are more harmful and damaging to people without really thinking about the consequences of the negative effects that they would have versus if you were to see that person face-to-face and have to say the same thing to them. So now people are willing to just kind of say whatever and not really care about that. And so if we're talking about, like, again, this is as an addiction or a problem that people are dealing with, what do you think about that, that it's saying that people who engage in more social media are less empathetic? Do you think that creates problems?
Well, I'll jump in on this one, and you'll laugh at me when I tell you this. I think that it is primarily a product of the desensitized as a society. If we just talk about the what's on TV for the baby boomers versus what's on TV for the millennials and how routinely they have observed acts of violence. So I think that may be more of a link to their lack of empathy. And also it goes back to what I always tell you about we need a bully. We need somebody who's going to hold you accountable and punch you in the face when you do something that you shouldn't do. And since we've tried to take away the bully, we've increased the ability for people not to be held accountable and not to be empathetic because there are no consequences for these actions.
I mean, I see the analogy that you're making about the bully. I still don't agree that you need the bully and need someone to punch you in the mouth so that you know what is wrong. I think there's something called a conscience and that whole term empathy that prevents people from doing things that are harmful to other people. Like, I don't have to have someone punching me in the jaw because I said something wrong to them. Like, I need to know that what I said was inappropriate and wrong.
Well, you're highly educated, Dr. Guy, and that's something that you are well versed in. Everyone else has not been afforded the same opportunity for the education and has the same level of empathy as you do. So sometimes it needs to be introduced by alternate means, i.e. the bully.
Okay. I'll go with the whole bully analogy again. And maybe the millennium generation is more desensitized to violence, and as a result of that, they're more willing to say harmful and damaging things on Facebook. When we talked about, you know, is social media ruining marriages, attorneys are saying that now, before, like when early 1960s, obviously at that point when individuals were getting divorced, there had to be a problem, a fault, like someone had to be at fault for these divorces. And then you moved into the 80s, and it was no-fault divorces. So people could get a divorce and say it was kind of irreconcilable differences. And now in 2015, we're seeing, according to the attorneys, that more and more divorces are a result of some type of social media interaction, whether it was Facebook, you know, tweeting something that the partner or the individual going through the divorce is saying it was a result of this. And so Viema gave an example of the guy who created a Facebook profile with a different name. But apparently, Viema, I'm assuming he actually put his real picture up there.
Yes, he used
okay. Because, yeah, that was real smart. So he put his actual picture up there with a different alias, and obviously friends linked to friends, and it came back to his wife. And so the funny part about you saying this is that I know someone who this has actually happened to. So it's not like this is not occurring. This is taking place, that people are believing that they can live these separate lives through social media, and it's not going to come back to them. Like someone, you know, finds out that their high school sweetheart from 20 years ago found them on Facebook, and now they're just rekindling as friends. And so the rekindling as friends on Facebook starts, and now it leads to dinner, and dinner leads to possibly other things. So if we're talking about, you know, is it damaging relationships? And we know a ton of stories. I'm sure if I ask you, Sean, about a Facebook scenario, you could give me more than one. If I asked you, Viema, about another scenario on Facebook occurring, I'm sure you guys could, you know, both give me several. So what do we think the concern is, or why do we think this is happening so much? Why is it so prevalent?
Well,
any ideas?
People aren't happy in their primary relationship.
Hmm?
So people aren't happy in their primary relationship.
Yeah, but people have been unhappy in their relationships.
Well, I guess it goes back to the tool. So, you know, like, say, for instance, if we take any form of business or medium and we apply it to the Internet, say if we talked about porn, for instance. Okay, porn used to be you had to go to a special store and go in a special room and get it from behind the counter in a plastic bag. Now you can click it on and get whatever you want. There was a stigma attached to buying porn. Like, ooh, you saw Mr. Johnson come out the naughty store, you know, with no windows. But now porn is consumed at home. The same thing with music. Music was something that you had to go out and purchase. Now you can get it on your phone for free, your computer for free. The model has changed. So we can't use the same relationship model, just like we can't use the same model for business, music, anything. So that's primarily the problem, is we have not really been able to change the model for relationships as it relates to the new rules with social media.
Hmm. Okay. I'll go with that, John. That definitely makes sense. Okay. What about the whole these individuals, and again, and this is just an example, what about the individual who wakes up first thing in the morning and they check their Facebook? Like, they don't brush their teeth, they don't get out of bed, they grab their phone, and the first thing they do is check their Facebook. Do we see anything wrong with that type of person?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on what it's for. Like, I believe social media is a great tool, but it's what are you using it for? Are you using it for news? Are you using it to promote yourself, a business, a product? You know, so it just kind of depends. Like, why am I checking this first thing in the morning? Do I want to check and see how many sales I got? You know, I was talking to a friend last night, said he was going to send me a message. You know, am I just checking the news? So, I mean, it's integrated because we look in you know, we don't buy newspapers. We don't buy magazines. You know, we don't watch the news as much. So it's part of our life. It's just depending on how you use it.
Okay. All right, VM, what do you think? And let's say it's not for job uses, because I do believe that that Facebook definitely has its pros in allowing individuals to market themselves. It definitely has that amazing benefit. But let's say this person is not utilizing it for business purposes and not necessarily so much about catching the news, but because they feel like they're attached to it, like their livelihood is attached to what happened while they were sleeping, what did they miss, and what do they have to get caught up on. VM, what are your thoughts about?
Mm-hmm. When you put it that way, I mean, I don't think anyone could not see it as being problematic. If you feel like you're missing out on life, and as soon as you wake up, you have to check your phone. Because at first I was going to say, well, maybe it's just as natural as maybe turning on the TV or, you know, turning on the radio or your iPad, your iTunes, your Pandora when you're getting ready for the day. But if it's, like, almost compulsive and you feel like you've missed out or there's this need and satiation that comes from checking the social media, then, yeah, I think that gets more into a problematic area. I don't want to call it an addiction because there's certain criteria that one needs to qualify for addiction. But if it is maybe causing some sort of impairment, I mean, are you late to work? Are you not functioning because you're checking your social media? That's a problem.
Mm-hmm. So there's a book written by Kim Stoles, and the title of the book is Unfriending My Ex and Other Things I'll Never Do. So this book talks about the whole social media craze. And in this book, there's a section that she talks about individuals who typically utilize social media such as Facebook or FaceTime and all these things, and she says she believes that there's some narcissism to these individuals. The fact that, for example, in using FaceTime, obviously you're able to see someone else as you're talking to them, but in the process you're able to see yourself. And so she admits to, while she's using FaceTime, even though she enjoys having the conversation more than anything, she really enjoys the fact that she's able to look directly at her own image. And so she goes on to say that she just thinks there's some narcissism to this and the fact that people are posting specific things about what they're doing and what they're buying and where they're going, and then they're waiting to see how many likes they get as a result of what they posted. And if there weren't enough likes based on that, then they're quick to post something else, again, to see how many likes. So, you know, they're checking their Facebook status throughout the day, or, you know, if they change their status or they change their picture on Facebook, they're waiting to get some comments about it or some likes. And when it doesn't happen, she says that it creates feelings of anxiety or uneasiness. So what are your thoughts about this belief that she says there's some narcissism to the individuals that are so addicted to their social media?
I don't think it's funny that I know that you brought that up to talk about how she related it to narcissism, but all I heard from it was that it's an individual that's seeking approval. And these are people that are seeking approval by going for the likes and how many likes they can get, and maybe not having enough likes with a certain photo, so then I'll post a quote or I'll post whatever in order to feel approved or to feel accepted. Which is really different from narcissism, because with narcissism, they don't really care that they're narcissistic. It doesn't occur to them. They just are more self-absorbed. But if this is a case where it's causing some negative feelings and you feeling rejected and not feeling accepted, that to me is more of a self-esteem thing than a narcissism thing.
Valid point. Sean, what are your thoughts about it?
Well, I think they're pretty much two sides of the same coin. I'm not sure, you know, what would you put before first, the self-esteem or the narcissism, you know, because you will see, and my friends, we used to joke about this, about, you know, the girl, when we were growing up, they had the big lips. She just was the girl with the big lips, you know, or the girl with the small waist and the big butt. She just was the girl with the small waist and the big butt. Nobody cared. You know, you still had to have a talent. Like, you had to do something besides have a big butt and a small waist. That wasn't a talent. But now, you know, you had to do something besides put on your lipstick sexy. So, you know, we've pretty much taken away a lot of things we were once considering as a talent and replaced them with some other items. So, and it still goes back to, you know, these people posting things because they want to be accepted, like you said. They're scared of being rejected, you know, and they don't want to publicize any mistakes they make. so they won't learn from anything. I think that's what's kind of funny. I talk to people about, you know, like the video game generation. Like they turn on the video game, they make a mistake, they cut it off and start over. Well, that's not life. So, you know, you'll see these things as well, you know, with, you know, like you talk about some of these certain individuals that, you know, are posting for likes or comments or, you know, putting up, you know, half-naked videos, twerk videos, whatever the case may be, because they're seeking approval. And that's just because they don't know how to present themselves outside of that. You know, like I always tell Dr. Guy, when I go out with a woman, I see what she's showcasing. You know, if she has big breasts and I see all her cleavage, I know that's what she thinks her best asset is. You know, so it's pretty much the same thing. Like, you'll see what people think is their best asset, whether it be where they go, is it their body, is it they got money. Like, you know, it's pretty much all on display for you to either indulge in or not.
Hmm. Okay. The whole idea for me behind, when I think about social media, I think of a society that has lost anonymity and confidentiality and privacy. Like, everything seems like it's open for the world to showcase it to. And grant you, there are some things that make sense. Like, if you're marketing a business or something like that, obviously that definitely makes a lot of sense. But there are other things that I've come across on Facebook, and I'm thinking, wow, okay, that was an interesting post. It seemed like it was very intimate and private, but yet it was shared with literally the world. And so do you guys think that's a cathartic process for individuals that, you know, for them, social, and I say social media because it could be any of them. It could be Facebook, it could be Twitter, it could be Instagram, that things are posted and it's more of a healing process for them than just, you know, it's just social media. Because I see it and think, wow, that probably should have been worked out in a counseling session. But maybe that's because I'm a counselor, and so that's the way I think. That's the way I think.
Right.
Well, from my perspective, and I look at my timeline a little different, so generally, if I would look now, you know, my friends who are male would be like, hey, I'm over here, I'm doing this, this happened to me today. My female friends, they tend to process their life through social media, so there'll be more intimate details like you're talking about. Like, my male friends don't do that. They will call each other or will send texts, but primarily it's like, hey, this happened. I'm over here. Ran into LeBron. You know, here's the picture with me and LeBron. But women are more, you know, a little bit more using social media to process their feelings and emotions that I see, at least on my timeline.
Okay. Sam, what are your thoughts on that?
I think I agree. It, to me, it is disturbing how much you will see on someone's Facebook post or Instagram. I can see where it could be cathartic, like maybe you're giving some sort of testament to, you know, progress in a year. Like last year, this X, Y, and Z was happening. Now this year, 2015, you know, I'm doing better or whatever. That part is cathartic and or maybe encouraging for other people. But I think I agree in that it almost causes one to be desensitized to what is intimate. And even, you know, you'll have people post things about their partners that it's like, did you clear it with them? Because I know I'd be mad if I knew you commented about me like this or, you know, quoted or blasted something that I said in confidence with you. So I agree. I mean, and that goes back to the whole empathy thing. There is just an overall sense of desensitization of what is acceptable and what should, you know, like what is appropriate and should be shared in public and what should not be.
Overall, do you guys think that we just have a voyeuristic society? Like, I remember, and you two will remember, well, you'll probably remember, but I definitely know Sean remembers the days where everything that came on TV was an actual show. Like, it was a sitcom, it was a movie. Reality TV did not exist. But, you remember them days, too. Like, everything had a plot to it. You know, it had a beginning, it had a storyline to it. And so I remember early on when the Real World hit, and I was like, oh, my God, the Real World, I love the Real World. But that seemed like it was really the catapult into this now reality world that we live in. And so has it now just become that as a society, we are a voyeuristic society, which is why social media is so prominent, because you literally get a glimpse into that person's life, like the things that they decide, that they choose to post. And like you said, Viema, some people have really intimate stuff about their partners that are posted on there that probably shouldn't have been posted. Definitely, I've, you know, seen posts about cheating spouses, and they've, you know, posted pictures and comments about where the spouse got caught cheating and who they were cheating with, and, you know, just all sorts of information. So is that maybe part of it, that we've just turned into this voyeuristic society, and all these social media apps have allowed us to do that?
Have we turned into a voyeuristic society, or have we always been that way, and now social media makes it easier and more acceptable?
I don't know. It's like which one came first, the chicken or the egg, or the egg or the chicken? And maybe that issue. Maybe we've always been this voyeuristic type of people, but it was done behind closed doors, which the example that Sean used, where people used to have to go buy porn at the little hole-in-the-wall store that had no windows that people would sneak in and sneak out of, whereas now it's accessible to, you know, anybody on a cell phone. So maybe that is the case. Sean, I know you and I definitely tend to think and perceive things differently. So what do you think about this whole voyeuristic society that we live in? Or is it a voyeuristic society?
Well, I mean, it's really starts with business. So initially what would happen was you would do a TV show, you would pay your actors residuals. Like I was reading somewhere, I think the Cosby Kids get like $10,000 every time an episode is played. So what you do now is you get, you know, your five fools, you get them to sign a contract that says they are not SAG actors, they don't get any residuals. The person that makes the show, a.k.a. Mona Young Scott, gets all of the money, and we put you out there for a season. If you do well enough, I'll bring you back and give you another check for the next season, but I get all the residuals. So it's pretty much a business model. So everybody pretty much is their own corporation or business, like, you know, Candy Coated Night. She's done well with her products and things that she's marketed, NeNe, going on to do some acting and some other things. So it's basically, you know, I control the platform. You know, I give you an opportunity. I get a check, but I get to keep all the residuals for everything that's replayed. And that's pretty much the new model. And people consume it, you know, and you link it with your Twitter, your Facebook. I was reading an article about Kevin Hart and one of the studios where it was upset with him because he would not use his social media platform to promote his new movie because he felt like that was something that belonged to him and he needed to be compensated. So it's not really about us being a voyeuristic society. It's just about the business model changing because everyone now is their own entity. You're your own corporation. You're your own business. You're the business of you, whether you realize it or not. So primarily what has happened. So a lot of times what you have is people that say things like, say, for instance, I was reading an article, and I know you say I read a lot, about a gentleman that had some shoes on his website, on his Twitter, Jim Jones, a rapper, and he was saying that every time he gets 1,000 comments, he gets $10,000, so he doesn't care if they're good comments or bad comments. So that just leads him to put up anything because he's getting money. So, I mean, I think that's just a shift in society. It's not necessarily that anything has changed. It's just the tools, you know, so.
That definitely does make sense. I get it from a business aspect, but I think even though it was a great business deal for the writers, that doesn't mean that the audience is going to buy into it and watch it, which we have. And I have to admit, my guilty pleasure is some of the reality shows because I find them so entertaining, the buffoonery. But I still think that there's something to, Sean, you said everybody is an independent contractor, like everybody is marketing themselves. And that's exactly what I think about when I think about Facebook, is that everyone has the opportunity to market themselves. So if you're single, the things that you are putting on, and if you're married, the things that potentially that you are putting on Facebook helps market you as that individual. So, you know, the individuals that are putting explicit pictures up or, you know, different things that some people may deem inappropriate, For them, that's how they market themselves to the public. And so maybe it is just about everyone being their own independent, you know, own independent agent, and Facebook and all these other different social tools allow them to do that with much more ease. So I do see the benefits of that. Again, pros and cons to everything. And our question for this evening was, do we believe that social media is ruining relationships? And so I think, Sean, that your stance was you don't think it is. It's people typically are kind of choosing to do what they want to do. Viema, your stance was that it does have an impact on some relationships that may be ending. I want you guys to think about this question. And so they're talking about how social media impacts court cases, and in particular in family court. And so they're saying that lawyers now, more than ever, are using the social media websites as evidence in all types of family law cases. So, for example, when people are typing on their computer and they think no one is watching, or they have this false sense of anonymity, they post whatever they really want to post. So even though they're in the process of potentially going through a divorce, they're still living their lives and posting things that can come back and, for the most part, kind of bite them in the behind. And so they gave some examples about things that people may be posting if they're in the middle of a lawsuit, or potentially think that they're going to be going through a lawsuit for a divorce or family cases. And they said, for example, an individual posting a picture of a new motorcycle or a new car, and they just filed a motion to reduce their child support or alimony. Or someone tweeting about their crazy Saturday night when they're supposed to be at home having parenting time with the kids. Another example they gave was updating your status about your date night with your new girlfriend even before you have separated from your wife. So what do you think about some of those comments that people literally post all the time, but really don't think about how it impacts them in particular in family law cases?
Yeah, clearly they're not thinking of anybody else.
They gave several scenarios about Facebook evidence that has been used actually to determine a case. So they said any type of evidence that proves that the other party lifestyle contradicts the claims of income that they may have. So if they're posting, what is it like when you go somewhere and you tell, like it tells you where you are? I don't know. What is it called?
Like when you tag where you are?
Yes. It's a title for that, though, right? Check-in status. Is that it?
Oh, yeah, that's a check-in.
Okay. So they're saying individuals are doing check-in status, but they're on trips or on vacation or even out of the country, speaks to their income, and obviously attorneys are looking at that. Or in any child custody case, if they're posting pictures of themselves out having drinks or having a good time, even though it may be with mutual friends, yet they're in a child support custody case. And so they just gave all these different examples of how social media now is definitely utilized in family law or court cases. And we know that it's not just only used in court cases or in law, but now a lot of employers are checking individuals' Facebook pages before they even offer the position. So, Sean, I'm going to go to you for that one because I just want to know what your thoughts are about, obviously, you have the right to post whatever you want to post on Facebook, but what do you think about employers actually going to your Facebook page and checking out and seeing what type of things you have posted?
I am guilty of doing it. So, you know, I wanted to comment also on the discussion about social media being used in family court. Well, you know, it's used in criminal court as well. I have an associate that was posting some things that were questionable, and it led to his current state vacation, 5 to 7 years. And, you know, it's something that is used as a tool. You know, that's not uncommon for law enforcement organizations to set up fake profiles and try to befriend you to, you know, get access to that information. So, when I was a manager, there was a young lady I was interested in hiring, and I wanted to see, you know, how she presented herself. And I did check some of her social media pages and, you know, found out that one of her fantasies was to have sex on the hood of an Escalade in the rain. So,
okay.
You know, so there was quite a discussion in the battle amongst my employees to try to sway me to hire her. But I felt as though that, although it might have been good for a store morale, I didn't know how it would pan up long term. So I decided to pass on her employment.
Okay. Again, prime example. So here's a young lady who could have potentially had a job, but because of a personal post that she made on Facebook that prevented that from happening.
Well, I would have hired her, but one of my associates did have an Escalade, so I didn't think that was a good idea.
Only you, Sean. Only you.
If he hadn't had an Escalade, she was in there. But you know,
so because you gave her means with an access to that, you thought
if you tell me your fantasy is to have sex with a guy in the rain on the Escalade, and one of the guys working with me has an Escalade, I don't really think that's a good idea. Like, if he'd had a Camry, you know, then I'd have been like, you know. But since all of the elements of what you want are already here, and I'm just adding you, I already see where this is going. So, you know.
Well, that was probably a very wise idea, Sean, so thanks for that.
I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I got a comment, you guys, that I am going to read from one of our listeners. And this is in reference to the question about voyeurism and are we in a voyeuristic society. And so the caller said that public confession can be voyeuristic, but sometimes a greater purpose is served. Not always, but sometimes. So, again, there's the pros and cons that, and I'm not saying there was anything, I don't think in my opinion that there's anything wrong with voyeurism. It was just definitely a question to our listeners, and thank you for responding by that, with that comment, that have we become this voyeuristic society? And based on that comment, looks like the listener pretty much agrees, but says that there can definitely be some pros and cons. And I think, Emma, you spoke to this, that there are some things that are posted on Facebook that are inspirational that definitely can benefit people. And so not all of the things that we're saying have been posted have negative connotations or are breaking up relationships, but there's definitely some good that has come from the utilization of Facebook and other social media tools like obviously Twitter, and I don't really understand the Instagram. Can someone explain the Instagram to me? Is it just pictures that individuals post?
Pretty much. It can be pictures or quotes of pictures, or pictures of quotes, rather, that they post. But, yeah, it is pretty much that.
Small videos as well.
Oh, yeah, and videos.
Okay. But there's, like, no section to like or dislike like you can on Facebook.
Yeah, you can like it. You can double tap, and that equals a like.
So Instagram
I mean, it's just really more about exposing your lifestyle or what you think is important to everyone else, and then you get to see if everybody else agrees, if, you know, a statue of whatever is important, or a picture, or, you know, like it's really more of a visual tool. Like, I think that it's there's social media pretty much for everybody how they perceive. So if you're more visual, there's Instagram. You know, if you're more, I guess, written, then there's Facebook or more Twitter then. You know, so it's just really how you consume or process information. There's really a platform that people kind of gravitate toward. I know with Pinterest, that's more women. You know, so you have different mediums for different segments of the population and demographic.
Mm-hmm. I think the Instagram or the Pinterest, one of those is probably the one that I think I would actually really gravitate more towards, which I have not tried to create an account for either one, but that's maybe something I need to do because I love pictures. Like, I am a picture junkie, And I think back just from my childhood, and my parents have, like, all these photo albums, which are really cool to go back and look at because it's hysterical to look at those throwbacks. But they're in picture form, and obviously it's really hard to keep those over time. And so it seems like the Instagram and the Pinterest would be the new millennium tool to catalog all those memories. So I get that one. That one makes a whole lot of sense to me. Before we wrap up, you guys, I want to ask you a question about social media and children and adolescents or teens in particular. Do you guys have any comments about that? I know neither of you.
It needs to be monitored. The world is full of interesting characters, and it's full of teenagers as well. So, one of the things that you kind of need to always remind them of is, when you send a naked picture and you're under 18, that's considered child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
So that opens you up to criminal charges and a whole lot of other things.
I told that to one of my clients because he is under the age of 18, and I seem to have gotten a flux of adolescents doing the whole sexting at one point, like last year and kind of this year. It was a really huge issue with teens, at least the ones that I was working with. And so recently one adolescent told me about and Sean or Viema, maybe you guys know the term, but when you send the picture explodes and it disappears.
It depends on what form you're using. There's apps that you can hide pictures. There are apps that the picture only stays active for a certain amount of time. There's a lot of different ways to do it. Now, I'll share this real quick. So I was speaking to a young lady, and we decided we were adults and we wanted to view each other's private parts. So, she sent me a picture, and I promptly sent her one back. But in my haste, I entered in one digit wrong. So I got a message from a very angry parent that said that, they did not appreciate seeing my private part on her 13-year-old's phone. She was going to press charges against me, and I told her that I apologized, but that was not meant for your 13-year-old daughter. I don't know your 13-year-old daughter, never seen her, don't want to see her, and you'll never hear from me again.
My goodness.
Made it clear that she would be reporting that to the authorities and they would be seeking me for, the charges. And I said, well, fine, go ahead. But, I'm like the gingerbread man, you really got to catch me. So, that was, my experience with that. I thought it was kind of funny because I was telling her, I was like, well, hey, I can tell you my friend whose number is, such and such and wasn't digit off, and she'll tell you that, it was supposed to be for her. I don't know your daughter. So, we kind of went. And the dad got involved. It got kind of messy. They was calling. I wouldn't answer. We was texting each other back and forth. But you know me. I'm like that. I don't care. I'll send a penis out like party flyers. It don't bother me, man.
Holy Sean. My whole point as we wrap up was for all of our listeners who have kids, in particular, children that have their phones and are, have access to computers and the internet, to definitely monitor your child's Facebook, Twitter accounts, Instagram, Pinterest, but to also look out for those special apps because these kids are on it and they are so tech savvy. And I wish I could think of the name for that app that, again, when you whenever you send the picture, they can see it, and after they open it up, it explodes. So, according to them, it doesn't, it didn't happen, didn't exist. And so I think that those are apps that you guys need to be mindful of. My neighbor, actually, she has an adolescent male, and she said, I guess with, I don't know if it's with the iPhone, but apparently you can download an app that will allow you to mirror what your child is seeing on their phone. So without them knowing it, you can literally have 24-hour access to what's happening on their phone at the same time. And so I don't know what the name of that one was either, but I think when we talk about definitely social media and how it has its pros and cons, one of the cons is that there are definitely predators on social media. And so I think that we didn't obviously talk about that as we talk about social media at all. But before we wrap up, any comments that you guys have to, I guess, safety-proof parents as it relates to social media and predators, whether it's on Facebook, Twitter, or any of these other types of social media apps?
I mean, I think you pretty much summed it up as far as monitoring your child, having conversations with your child or your teen. Being that the commercial that comes to my mind is, I forget what, it was like a drug commercial where this woman, like, interrupts her son's shower, like, he's an adolescent, he's embarrassed, but she's, like, asking him, have you smoked, you know, weed, what have you experimented with, whatever. I mean, really getting involved, as annoying as you may seem, but getting involved and asking the hard questions so that they are, eventually they, you would think that they would feel that you care and you're asking for a protection and safety rather than just to be a pest.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sean, any closing remarks from you tonight?
Yeah, I'm so out of the know what to say to a teenager lane that I'm just not going to do that.
Any closing remarks on the Facebooks, Twitter, you know, the whole social media frenzy as it relates to relationships?
Just basically, I mean, you know, it's the tool to be used if you want to explore some parameters of your relationship. I always tell everybody, just be honest. You know, if you want to mess with somebody else, then ask. You know, if that doesn't work, then maybe you need to move on. You know, so I'm all about being honest and open. So if that's where you're leaning, it's always the cover-up that gets you more time than the actual crime. That's what we used to say in politics. So just be honest.
You know what? That's probably one of the best things that we have addressed all night, Sean. So thank you for saying that. Just be honest. We said that the whole idea behind social media allows people to, you know, create identities or have this, you know, false sense of anonymity. But at the end of the day, I think the best thing is to be honest, regardless of what you're posting. Honesty is probably the best thing. So, Sean, thank you for bringing that up. Viema, thank you for joining us tonight. And again, congratulations on your new marriage. And hopefully you will come back and join us again in the future. Sean, as always, it's a blast. Thank you for joining me tonight. I apologize again for the frog in the throat, but hopefully next week I'll be back and better. And don't forget, you guys, to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on. Tell a friend about Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo. Everyone, have a blessed week.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks. Bye-bye.